Hey, this is Adam Richman from Food Network UK, and you are feasting your ears on the Hotspur podcast. Come on, you Spurs.
Yeah, well, welcome to a brand new Hotspurs podcast. It is Friday, the 24th of April, 2020. I am Steve in Leon C in Essex. And on today's My Spurs Journey, we have got Jack Latchford from Echoes of Glory podcast. How are you doing, Jack?
Very well, Steve. Pleased to be here and pleased to be chatting all things Spurs with you.
Yeah, brilliant. Right, well, let's get straight into it then. In terms of your podcast, tell us the story behind that and how you got into it.
Yeah, sure. So Echoes of Glory, for anybody who doesn't know, we're actually in our ninth season now. So we've been running for quite a while. I think I've been on the podcast for about 5 or 6 years now. I got into it because ASD, who is still on the podcast very regularly and is still the brains behind everything that we do, he was running it at the time, and he actually joined my company and was my boss. So we obviously were working together, got chatting, getting to know each other, and obviously found out that we both supported Spurs. He was going every week at the time. I'm a season ticket holder, I've been for quite a while. And he said, you know what, do you fancy coming on and giving it a go? And I'd never done anything like it before. And it was quite strange, because actually the first few episodes I did it, I was quite nervous. And it was a bit funny, because it's like, you know, you're just talking to your friend about Spurs like you would do any other day of the week, but it was a little bit funny when somebody puts a microphone in front of you and starts recording it. But it just sort of snowballed from there, really, where, you know, I really enjoyed it, started going back and doing it fairly regularly. And now I've taken over the running of it because he's got a couple of little ones, so can't commit to it as much anymore. But it's brilliant, you know, I absolutely love it. Speaking to Spurs fans from all over the world, meeting up with people that listen before the games is fantastic. And I've had the pleasure of speaking to some ex-players as well over the last couple of years, which has been absolutely amazing. So love the podcast. You know, you can find us on SoundCloud, on Twitter, on Facebook, all of the regular places. But yeah, we like to think ourselves as a podcast that is fairly level-headed and, you know, just gives everybody that listens or wants to contribute an opportunity to voice their opinions, really.
Well, you certainly, it's one of the ones that I listen to. Back in the day, I listened to them all. But there's now probably about 15, 20 podcasts from all over the world. So I just don't have time to listen to them all. But yours is one I listen to every week. Fighting Cock's another one. And then there's a couple of others. Mm. And what I like about yours is the mix. So you won't necessarily agree with Andy, Stato. ASD very often comes at it from another side. You have your dad on sometimes. Yeah. He talks about the old days. Very, very good. And Javid, he comes at it from a different side. So you all very, very don't agree with each other very often, which is a really good way to do the podcast, I think. You know, a lot of the time when I did it with Colin, I'd have to play devil's advocate, even though I agreed with him, just for the entertainment value, and then people would have a go at me for my views, but then I've kind of become a parody of myself and start believing the rubbish that I was talking, and that's just comes with podcasting. Talking about nerves there, I always get nervous before any show, as many as I've done, so absolutely. And the other one you said about was some special guests, and you had one on, you had Mickey, didn't you?
Yeah, we had Mickey Hazard this week, which was fantastic. And it was great, you know, just to listen to, you know, he's a guy that obviously hasn't played for Spurs for quite a while, but he's still obviously massively involved with the club. But his love and passion for Tottenham is just amazing. And whenever we speak to either former players, we've had Paul Miller on the season before, and he was exactly the same. Their love and passion just doesn't die. And it's absolutely incredible to hear it. And also you hear it in the voices of supporters that have been going for 40, 50 years. But, you know, to hear it from somebody that's been there and done it for us is amazing. So we're very lucky with, you know, to be in the podcast circle and actually be able to speak to these guys that have, like I said, been there and done it for our club. It's amazing. It's a privilege every time.
And he's terrific, isn't he, Mickey? I mean, people like Mickey, Paul Miller, Graham Roberts, they're on Twitter. They put themselves out there. They give their views. But they try and stay positive. Like I'm a positive. You're very positive, Jack. When I listen to you, you know, with all the doom and gloom that goes on, you're like, but we could do this. We could do that. We could go forward. That's what these guys do. But I don't know. I haven't heard the show yet. I'll probably listen to it today. But they get dogs abuse on Twitter. And I know that a couple of them have dropped out a couple of times and gone back on. And I know Mickey tweeted something out last week about something completely different and get dogs abuse for it. And it's just a world of strangeness where you can just say what you want. Well, you think you can say what you want, but then you get dogs abuse for saying it. And it's this, I want to speak my mind. And, well, you can speak your mind, but you're stopping me. No, I'm not.
It's absolutely crazy. It can be a bit of a strange world, really, because, you know, you said there about, you know, like being positive, and I think you've got to be. I think as a person, as a podcaster, as a Spurs fan, you know, like you've got to look on the positives of stuff, because otherwise, you know, you're going to end up absolutely hating football and hating Spurs. And like, that's not the point of it. The point of it is, you know, is a bit of an escape from your life. Like, that's how I look at the podcast and stuff as well. You can get out of reality for a little bit and talk about whatever you want with people, with whatever people you want to talk to. So I think being positive is a really key thing, because, you know, like, you know, I listen to a few podcasts, and the last thing that I want to tune into is somebody moaning and groaning about, you know, oh, I don't like this, I don't like that. It's like, let's talk about the stuff that we like, because I think it makes for a much better show.
Absolutely. And I was listening to Last Word on Spurs, talking to Dean Austin. I don't know if you've heard that one. It's a brilliant interview. And he just talks about how the first and third year of his career were good at Spurs. Second one, I think, was injury ravished. And after that, he got a terrible injury that just wouldn't go away. And if you remember Dean Austin playing, that was exactly how we saw it from the stands, apart from the fact that we didn't know about the injuries, per se, because, you know, you didn't have Sky Sports News pumping in information constantly. And he also seemed to want to keep it on the down low, because all he wanted to do was just play. So when you look at, someone like a Harry Winks at the moment, and I'm critical of him, and many people are, but he has had a major injury. And you just think, what it made me think was, hang on a minute, I think we need to maybe just take these things into account a little bit more and just go, blimey, you know, he's had a major injury. He's trying to get himself back in. The team's playing poorly. And there we are going, why isn't he playing like Frank Lampard week in, week out?
Me being
one of the ones that says that the most. So,
definitely. You know. And I think that people forget as well that footballers are humans at the end of the day, right? And what we always try and do on Echoes of Glory is we try to relate to it as much as possible, like what footballers are experiencing through our everyday jobs. And, you know, you think of a footballer having a major injury, it's very difficult for that footballer to come back and be the exact same player, because, you know, they're humans. You know, everybody's bodies react differently. And I think about, you know, in whatever people do for a living, if you work in an accountancy or you work in construction or whatever it is you do, if you have a major setback at work, and that doesn't have to be physical, that can be anything, it's always going to take you time to get back. And, you know, you'll end up, You might get back to the same level, but then you're probably not going to be the same employee that you were 12 months before you had that setback. And I think footballers are exactly the same. And I just think we're all very quick to judge players, you know, on injuries and performances. But I think that's because we're all so emotional, right? We love Spurs, you know, beyond any level that you can even really put into words. So, you know, when we are struggling and playing poorly and having bad results, we're so quick to jump on the bandwagon and, you know, make players scapegoats. Where actually, I think it's always important to just try and take the emotion out of it a lot of the time and think that most of the time it's actually easier when you're watching sides that aren't your club, right? Because you can make proper informed decisions and opinions because you haven't got that emotional investment. But with Spurs, it's the complete opposite. And, you know, I find myself at games making comments and shouting, and I think that's complete nonsense what I'm saying, but I'm just so in the moment that sometimes it can be hard to control yourself.
Yeah, I sit next to a guy who is very, very level-headed, and although I speak on here very relatively level-headedly, and I have my moments and my rants, when I'm actually at the game, obviously got my boy one side of me who just sits there nice and quietly and cheers at the right times and everything, doesn't moan, and then on the other side I've got this really nice guy who just just nudges me every so often and says, will you stop moaning? And I'm like, yeah, I know, sorry. back. We're 1-0 up. I'm like, yeah, I know, sorry. So it is a crazy world we're in. Just very quickly then, before we get into the juicy questions, currently Spurs, we've got Levy with the furloughing thing. We've got Kane desperate to leave. We've got Vertonghen now desperate to leave. Am I interpreting that right, Jack?
Oh, I mean, you just can't believe anything you read, can you? And, you know, like, the amount of times over the years that I've ended up getting caught up with, you know, stories that are leaked in the press, and then none of it ever ends up happening. So I just take all of it with a massive pinch of salt and think, I never believe any transfer rumours until I see the player standing there with the shirt and the club making an announcement.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, you could find rumours about absolutely anyone and anything, couldn't you, if you spend time browsing the web. So I try not to think too much about it. To be honest, I can't see that there's going to be any major transfers happening for the foreseeable future now, with everything that's going on in the world at the moment. Like, there's no way clubs can be dropping £100-150 million on players. It's like, surely it's going to go down the route of free transfers and loan deals and swaps. That's the only thing that logically makes any sense to me. But whether or not that's even going to be possible, like, we don't know at the moment. And the point on the furlough thing, I think everybody was massively disappointed when they saw. I wasn't disappointed that Spurs were necessarily using the furlough scheme, but the fact that the staff weren't going to get paid the full amount was what was really, that really hit a nerve with me. You know, I didn't have any problems with Spurs actually saying we're going to furlough, but do the 20% and top it up so at least they're paid in full. We've backtracked on it now and we're just paying them in full anyway. So I think that's a good move, but it is a bit of a shame that it's ended up going the way it's gone. And there was obviously a lot of pressure from supporters and the media on Spurs, and they did have the balls to make the decision of, you know what, we'll actually change our mind, which is a good thing. But it's just a shame that it's ended up going that way. But we're there now. So at least we're doing morally the right thing. So, yeah, I'm pleased that we've done it. But it's just a bit of a shame that it's gone the way it has.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope that Levy has done that for the right reasons and not just succumb to pressure. Again, I'm looking at things from the other side. The initial thing was, yeah, we're furloughing, but we're going to keep an eye on the situation. A week later, he comes out and says, okay, what, we'll backtrack and we'll do something else. Hopefully that's because he's looked into it. I mean, we know he's a clever man and he's a businessman. And hopefully he hasn't just gone, well, Liverpool backtrack, so I better backtrack. Even though, you know, it's not very good for the club. You know, I look at it from a different angle all the time. And I'm not just going to dive in headfirst and say, yeah, we need to pay everybody all the money. You know, Joe Lewis needs to put his hand in his pocket and all this, because I just don't know how that world works. So it's very difficult. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and every single question was, my answer to every question this guy asked was, I have no idea. And then he asked another one 5 minutes later. But everyone had these opinions. And I was like, my goodness, none of you know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's all pie in the sky. None of you have run a multi-billion-pound business or a football club or have run a business in Corona times.
Yeah.
And it's all, you know, I love a bit of speculation in that. But, you know, my answer to all is, I have no idea. Right, what I do know is some of the answer to some of these questions. So let's get into it then. Who is your favourite football club?
Oh, of course it's Tottenham Hotspur. There's no other answer.
And why is that?
You know what? Spurs is, it's in my blood, to be honest. My dad's a massive Spurs supporter. He's been a season ticket holder for many, many years. He was passed it on by his dad, my granddad, and it's just been the club of the family, to be honest. So it's just a generational thing. And if I'm lucky to ever have kids, I'll be passing the misery on to them as well.
And what about granddad then? So was he from Spurs or anything? Or
So he's sort of born and bred in Woodford. So, you know, a fairly Spurs dominated area.
Yeah.
And just, went from an early age as well and just fell in love with it. You know, it's amazing that, you know, I can speak to my granddad who saw Spurs win the double, which is just, you know, it still seems like a really strange and bizarre thing to me that, you know, he's actually watched us win the league and the cup. And I just think, God, how lucky are you, you know? And he's told me many stories about the, you know, how brilliant that side was. And he still says that Cliff Jones, even though Gareth Bale was Welsh, he always says Cliff Jones is the best Welshman that's ever played for Tottenham. You know, there's not much footage that you can go and see of these guys, unfortunately. But, you know, if somebody that's seen Bale and has seen Cliff Jones is saying Jones is in another league, then you sort of have to believe him.
Well, I'll up you one other Welshman, which is Mike England. Uncle Mike, as I like to call him. Anyway, what's your favourite country?
Oh, that's a great question. You know what? I love the UK just because, you know, that's where I'm from. That's, you know, that's what I know. I'm lucky to have travelled a little bit. I travelled around the States last year, which was amazing. I spent a month over there, so I would probably put the two of them on a level playing field.
Right. Well, America is my favourite. So just very quickly, where did you go in America?
I went to the West Coast first. Yeah. So I went to LA. That was where my trip started. And got to experience, you know, the incredible life of Hollywood for, you know, 4 or 5 days, which was just absolutely insane. Went down to Santa Monica Pier, which was always been on my life's bucket list to walk that pier and spend some time there. And that was just absolutely fantastic. So I was there for a bit.
See anyone around? See any stars there?
You know what? I didn't actually. I saw quite a lot of their houses because we did one of those tours where you, it's a celebrity homes tour and they drive you up through Beverly Hills and, you know, take you as close to celebrities' houses as possible, which was quite a strange experience, but one that was great fun.
Yeah.
But LA was an incredible place. It's probably my favourite place that I've ever been, actually. The weather was just incredible.
Did you go to any of that? Because I'm a rock man. So did you go to any of those rock bars, like the Rainbow or...
No, but I saw them. So a lot of the tours I did would take you past all of the famous landmarks and areas of it. So I saw pretty much everything, but no, I didn't go in and experience any of them.
Yeah.
But I went to one of my favourite things that I did when I was in LA was we went to the shooting range there, you know. And again, on my bucket list has always been to fire a handgun, but obviously you can't do that over here. So to go and do that was a great experience. And again, one that was really strange that you effectively just go in, sign a waiver, hand your money over, and they give you a gun and off you go. It was just a little bit like...
We could talk about this for 2 hours, but we better get back to football. So just very quickly then, so LA, where did you go from there?
LA and then down to San Francisco, which was amazing, you know, experienced Alcatraz, the Golden Gate Bridge. Yeah. And then I flew across to the West Coast and went to Orlando and then down to Miami. Right. All over both coasts. It was a fantastic trip. So, yeah, America, amazing country.
Brilliant. Who's your most hated? Let's bring it back down. Who's your most hated footballer?
Oh, you know, whenever I think about players that I hate, naturally I go straight to Arsenal. Just because, you know, growing up, I started watching Spurs late 90s, early 2000s. That was when I started to go because I was old enough. And back then, Arsenal would beat us pretty much every game, which was horrific. So I always massively despised Robert Pirès just because he would always score against us.
Yeah.
But I think that probably the player that I hate the most, and this is because he was such an important player for us, and I loved him for a few years, is Judas himself.
Yeah.
And to be, you know, to go from being our captain, and he was our best player by a country mile, to then moving across and, you know, to our rivals and having a successful time there as well, which made it even more painful. I'd probably say Sol Campbell's probably the one.
I think that's probably on most people's list, definitely. And the club you hate the most?
Arsenal, definitely, but I would say that Chelsea are probably not far behind them.
Yeah. On Twitter, I follow TalkSport, and one of the comments this morning was Ray Parlour saying that back in the day, he wasn't bothered about Tottenham. It was all about Arsenal v Spurs. Mm. And when we get back to playing football, and if we finish above Arsenal again, we've got to start saying those sorts of things. We've got to start saying, listen, we don't care about Arsenal anymore. They're not really our rivals.
Mm-hmm.
Our rivals are Chelsea and Liverpool now.
Yeah.
Just rub it straight back in their faces.
Yeah.
We've got to start doing that because, you know, let's get our own back on some of these. And the other thing I'd love us to do is go and buy one of their players. Now, at the moment, you know, there isn't very much that you can really buy from them because they're such a poor side. And I've said on this podcast, I listen to the Arsenal podcast, so you don't have to. They're loving their squad. They think their squad is absolutely brilliant at the moment. Where I'm looking at it going, what? You got a goalkeeper and a striker, possibly Lacazette as well. What else is there? But if we could go there, you know, and I don't know, maybe get their goalkeeper, who seems half decent, I wouldn't mind that, would you?
I it's a funny one, Arsenal, because I've thought that they've had a poor squad for quite a few years, but what they always seem to have had, even when, you know, they moved into their stadium and they weren't spending a lot of money, they always had firepower and goals. And they still have that now with Aubameyang and Lacazette up top. They still have that. And it's, even when we play them, I look at, you know, the teams on paper, and I think we're battling them in every single position. But they do have that quality in the final third, which really, I think for the last 7-8 years has been what sort of kept them alive, really. You know, if you took Aubameyang out of that side, you know, they really are a bang average team. But he's there, you know, and there's a case to be made, you know, if you took Kane or Son out of our team at the moment, maybe we'd be in a similar position. But your point on, you know, signing one of the players, I've always been a bit against it. You know, even though we've had players that have played for Arsenal that have been relatively successful for us over the recent years, you know, like the most controversial one, obviously, was Adebayor. But I always stand by Adebayor and say that, you know, when he was on his game for us, he was absolutely unplayable. He really was. It just obviously didn't end well for him. And we had Gallas as well, who came in, and that was another controversial one. But again, he was actually really good for us. And yeah. I think it was hard, because if he hadn't have played for Arsenal, every Spurs fan would have absolutely loved William Gallas in a Spurs shirt. But you just knew, didn't you, watching him, that he was an Arsenal player first, and he's come to Spurs because that's where his career's gone. You know, if we were to sign their top player at the top of their game, then it would be a little bit different. But I think the players that we have ended up getting from over the years have never been sort of in their prime.
The trouble is, if we did a Sol Campbell on them, we'd have to get Xhaka because he's their captain. And no,
let's not do that.
Exactly. Who is your favourite ever player?
My favourite, there's a few, but the standout for me is Ledley King. He was our captain, our leader. He was always the best player on the park, and I love watching the way he used to defend. That he was so elegant and graceful, and he'd take the ball without even having to touch the opposition striker. He was a phenomenal player. And I think that he sort of represented the core values of Spurs as well. You know, he was just a Spurs man.
Yeah.
Like I said, such a talented player. It was so sad, the injuries and that he had. But I think that the injuries that he did have, sort of, that was part of his story. And I think that if he hadn't have been so unlucky with the knee injury, he probably would have ended up going, you know, to one of the top sides, because everybody that ever played with him or played against him always used to say, God, Ledley King's a player.
Yeah.
So I think, in a way, you know, the injuries were probably a good thing for Spurs, because we were able to keep him for as long as we did. But he was sensational, you know, the captain, the leader. Whenever you went to a game and you saw his name was on the team sheet, you always knew we had a chance. And I think that's when you know a player's, you know, a real top player, when you see his name and you think we can beat this team. Doesn't matter who we're going up against. If Ledley's at the back, you know, we've got a great chance. So Ledley King for me, my favourite player.
Yeah, in that Friday program that used to be on with Paul Merson and the other bloke. What's that called? The Boot Room or something? When they had a...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What's that called? Was it called a Boot Room?
Was it a Fantasy Football Club or something like that? And they used to do their 1-11.
1-11. And Ledley King was always, not just Spurs players, but whoever, England players or whatever, would all... Yeah. And every time they would pick Ledley King and one Rio Ferdinand or one other. But every time they would just say, yeah, just what a player. Great stuff. Now, who's your favourite ever manager?
So this was actually a really hard one, because there are a few that stick out for me. You know, I absolutely loved the Pochettino reign. That was magnificent. You know, competing at the top end of the league, you know, incredible football. So he has to be up there. But you know what? I look back and I think the times that I probably enjoyed the most is probably the Redknapp era.
Yeah.
You know, he might not have. Well, he definitely isn't the best manager that I've seen, you know, in terms of being a tactician and all of the other stuff that comes with it. But for me, you know, he came in a time where it looked like we were going to go back to the dark days of the early 2000s and just be absolutely nowhere, and galvanised the group of players that we knew we had some good players there. But he just, for me, he massively brought back the feel good factor and the belief. And I think we'd flirted with it in the Martin Yeo era. And that was when I sort of first thought we could be a decent side here. But the Redknapp days were just fantastic. You know, going to the old White Hart Lane, Bale, Modric, Lennon, you know, with the fact when we signed Van der Vaart as well. And I just went into every game knowing no matter what this opposition team do, we're going to beat them. We had so much pace. We were so exciting to watch. And I think we were a classic Spurs side under Redknapp, in terms of we'd build it up and we'd have a great run and then we'd lose a stupid game, you know. And when you look back on it, the highs and the lows, I think, is what made that time so enjoyable. I compare that to Pochettino, and to be honest, it was pretty much all highs. So I don't know if I necessarily appreciated the highs under Poch as much as I did under Redknapp, because you sort of always knew there was a dodgy result around the corner, yeah, because we weren't quite consistent. But I think those Redknapp days were probably my favourite, you know. And again, Ledley was a key player for us then. We had Bale, we had Defoe, you know, he brought Robbie Keane back. You know, it was sort of all of those players that I grew up and loved watching were sort of all in the side at the same time, and we were playing some great football as well. And when we broke into the Champions League for the first time, you know, okay, we didn't win a trophy under him, but that was probably bigger than any trophy we could have won at that time anyway. So I think I'd probably go for Redknapp, just because for me, being, you know, fairly young at the time, to actually be going and watching my side week in, week out, winning most weeks and playing great football, I think that was probably the start of the expectation that we now have every week.
I think what he did, just on those, keeping things simple, and, you know, his first signing was Palacios. And we talk all the time about Liverpool didn't have a goalkeeper, didn't have a centre-back, so they went and bought two of the best, you know, in the world. Mm. And in hindsight, with ourselves, yes, we've got several positions that we need to buy players in. But go back 2 years, would we have really seen, you know, Rose, Vertonghen and all these players sort of fall off a cliff as much as they have? No, you know, we thought, yeah, we've probably got a good 3 or 4 more years with them. And we didn't foresee, you know, Dyer getting awful injury, go back 3 years, and you say, you know, Dyer's going to be absolutely awful in 3 years' time. You go, no, he's not. He's going to be fantastic. You know, you look at the difference between him and Henderson now, when 3 years ago, Dyer was ahead of Henderson in the England side. So we didn't have that, and that's all we're hindsight. But what Redknapp did, and I mentioned to my mate the other day, that if Jose just said, you know what, this isn't for me, and we needed someone for the last 10 games of the season, I'd get Redknapp back. And I just say, right, you've got these 10 games, if you fancy it. He'd definitely say yes, because he's such a football man. But then, even then, if he said, no, I fancy another year, would you, you know, and you said, right, okay, well, what do we need? He'd go, bang, 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 probably buy 3 players. And us as Spurs fans would go, yes, that's exactly what we needed. Because Palacios, Spurs, they're a weak touch. Who do we need? A big, strong centre midfielder. Went out and bought them. And you, like you say, got back those players, Defoe, Keane, Nico Crancher was fantastic. I'll tell you, a brilliant signing that he got was Peter Crouch.
Yeah, he always gets a bad rep, Crouch, but he was so good for us. And that Crouch Van der Vaart partnership that we had for that season was so, so effective. And he did that, you know. And another one that I think was a massively underrated signing that we made under him was Scott Parker, who was a player that, it wasn't a Spurs signing, because I think he was 30, maybe even 31 when we brought him. It wasn't the type of player that we'd ever go and buy. And again, just solidifying that midfield, knowing what you have to do to win games of football in the Premier League, you know, he would just go in, win the ball back, pass it 5 yards to Modric, and we'd be away. Yeah, and, you know, and they were literally the tactics. Yeah, it was just...
It was... Got in. So you should look at the players that Redknapp signed, and you're going, blimey. Of course, the most famous transfer window was the Nelson Sahar one. Now, again, I'm going to take you back to the time. The two things on this. First of all, I remember saying at the time, well, I've seen Ryan Nelson kick our centre forwards for the last 5 years in a Blackburn shirt. So I didn't see that as an awful signing. And in fact, when he played for us, he was all right. You know, he was only like our third or fourth choice centre-back when the others were injured. And the other one was Sahar, who hit the ground running, didn't he?
I think the disappointing thing for me with that window is if we'd have gone into it and we'd have just signed Sahar and we'd have just signed Nelson, I think people would probably have thought, that's not too bad. But I think because we were being linked with Tevez, that was one, wasn't it? It was a massive one that was all over the
Tevez
press.
Tevez and Cahill at the time, was it?
Yeah, and I think when you're linked with those players, and it did seem, especially with Tevez, like there was a bit of substance to the story, then all of a sudden the expectation's so high. And then when you bring Luis Saha in on a free, all of a sudden you think, oh, that's a poor signing.
Well, my theory on that, and I've heard this from a couple of sources, is literally that they weren't on good terms, Levy and Redknapp, and it had already been decided that this wasn't going to be a long-term thing. I've heard, you know, it's quite specific stories of Redknapp and Levy not seeing eye to eye, basically.
Yeah.
And so, Levy, not so much as a case of Levy being tight, more Levy going, well, this guy's going in the summer, whatever happens, because I can't get on with him. And I'll save the money for whoever next is coming in. But that is speculation, but, it stands to reason, unless you specifically think no, Levy wanted to buy a new yacht that Christmas, ready for the summer. So who's your legendary player?
My legendary player, I think somebody that, you know, played for Spurs, two spells with us, played with us for a long time. I don't know if people would necessarily agree that he'd fit into the legendary bracket, but for me growing up, he was always one of my favourites, is Robbie Keane.
Yeah.
And I absolutely loved watching Robbie Keane play. You know, I always enjoy watching players that aren't naturally blessed for pace. And I think when Robbie Keane was with us, he was quick in his young years, but when he was with us, he was never the quickest. And it always used to amaze me the amount of times he'd get in behind defences, because most centre-halves could match him or beat him for pace. But he was just, again, such a brilliant player. And I think for me, growing up watching him play, there's just so many iconic memories. You know, the celebration just sort of, you know, being the main one. But, you know, his work rate was always fantastic. He was another player that loved the club. And I think that I'm always more into players that are fully committed, or just they get it. It doesn't always mean that they're going to be the best players. But, you know, I mentioned Scott Parker there, you know, probably the most committed player I've ever seen play for Spurs. Michael Dawson was another one. Again, maybe not the best player, but he, you know, wore his heart on his sleeve. And I think Robbie Keane did that as well. But he was a scorer of great goals. He was a clinical player. He was a smart player. And you don't score as many goals and play for, you know, the top sides that he played for if you're not a quality player. So he might not be one that maybe sticks out to everybody to put in the legendary bracket. But for me, Robbie Keane will always be one of my favourite strikers.
And who's your favourite goalkeeper?
I have to say Paul Robinson. I loved Robbo. Again, he was another one. He was England's number one, and I think people forget that. You know, he was a real, real good goalkeeper. And I just, again, another player that was committed and loved Spurs. And he was always up for the derbies. And again, as a supporter, that's what you want to see. You know, and there was a period of time where we had that sort of like that spine of the team, which was made up of fundamentally British players, which was just absolutely fantastic. So Paul Robinson was brilliant. I absolutely loved him.
Yeah.
Lloris is definitely a better goalkeeper, but Robinson for me will always be up there as my favourite until a better one comes along.
Now, we may have already covered this one, but your favourite defender?
It definitely Ledley. But
any other
honourable
mentions?
I have to give a mention to Alderweireld as well, just because he's probably the closest player to Ledley that we've had in terms of just a real complete defender, great on the ball. You know, he's a real modern-day centre-half. You know, he can play passes 50, 60 yards and put it on a sixpence for our wingers. A real sensational player. You know, if we'd have ever been lucky enough, they'd have been in the same generation and that would have been your pairing, that would have been phenomenal. So Alderweireld was brilliant. And I briefly mentioned Michael Dawson as well earlier, who, like I said, he wasn't the best player in the world, but he'd put his head on absolutely anything. He'd throw his body on the line all the time. And it was a really committed player and a great captain for us, even if he was a slightly limited player at times.
Yeah. I've got a mate in Spain who I speak to every summer, who's massively into football, and he's a brilliant gauge of Spanish football. And when we bought Soldado, I said to him, yeah, we got this guy Soldado. He said, he's not very good. And I was taken back, right? And I was like, what? Anyway, the very next summer, I said to him, blimey, you were right about Soldado. I didn't see that coming at all. He said, I told you. And he said, but you've just signed Toby Alderweireld, who obviously was at Atletico Madrid. Then he went to Southampton, didn't he, for that season?
Yeah.
He said, but you just signed Art Alderweireld. He's fantastic. And I said, well, do you know what? I'm not going to argue with you. I don't know very much about him because I don't follow Southampton. I didn't follow him at Atletico. But I said, okay, I'll take your word for it. And then the next summer I said to him, you're absolutely right again.
Yeah.
What a great player. Let's rattle through these because otherwise we'll be here all day. And the wife's back in a couple of hours. So I'm just going to get this done. Who's your favourite ever midfielder?
My favourite ever midfielder? This is a really difficult one, right? Because there's been a few over the years, but I think I'd probably have to go with Luka Modric. Yeah. Dembele was a close one, as was Michael Carrick, because they were both brilliant players. But I think Modric, you know, is probably the most talented midfielder that I've seen in the Spurs show. You know, again, a player that just has absolutely everything in his game, and he's gone on to Madrid to win titles and Champions League, you know. So, yeah, Luka Modric, for me, is the best midfielder.
All right. And your favourite ever striker?
My favourite ever striker, I mentioned Robbie Keane. It probably would be him, but we can't talk about strikers and not mention Harry Kane. Just, you know, the guy is absolutely phenomenal and nobody saw it coming either. You know, all the Spurs fans that we talk to, no one ever says, oh yeah, we knew Kane was going to be a quality player. He's just been the biggest shock, I think, you know, from watching him make his debut and have a few early games in the Europa League where he looked terrible.
Yeah.
To be honest, to now being one of the best strikers in the world. We're so, so lucky to have him, and it terrifies me where we'd be if we didn't have him.
I think what he does quite often is he gets people doubting him, particularly from, we know what he's about, but particularly from other clubs. They all this speculation again at the moment. Most of my Man United supporting mates are like, we don't want him, but he's rubbish. Certainly Liverpool don't want him. They're constantly slagging him off. And what we're, as Spurs fans, we're going, fine. If you don't want him, we'll keep him. And when they say about him going off, you know, there's only three or four clubs he could possibly go to. Because like I say, Man United don't particularly want him. Liverpool definitely don't want him. Man City, you know, is he going to go? I've talked about it before. I was going to say something else about Kane as well, but I've lost my train of thought.
I think my only concern about Kane is, obviously, he's had his fair share of injuries as well. And the only thing that I sort of
That's what I was going to talk about. Yeah, go on.
The only thing that I don't quite see in him as much anymore is, I think back to when we were so, so good, the last couple of seasons at White Hart Lane under Poch, when we were just pressing teams from the front. And I don't necessarily see that as much from him anymore. And I don't know if that is a tactical thing or if maybe he can't quite play at that same intensity. That's my only slight concern with him.
Well, what I was going to say about that was talking about that Dean Austin interview.
Yeah.
I want Harry Kane to listen to that because, again, it made me think about Harry Kane's mentality. Again, I know I've got a connection with the club who works very closely with Harry Kane, and he just said he wants to play every minute of every game. And we know that as Spurs fans anyway, but that just confirmed it for me. You know, there's no way in hindsight that he should have played that final in Madrid. You know, you saw the way he played. He wasn't particularly good. And even Van Dijk afterwards said that wasn't the Harry Kane that I played 6 months earlier, who tore me to shreds. You know, but Harry Kane was desperate to play, and I want him to listen to that Dean Austin interview because Dean Austin, completely different players, but had injuries and didn't tell anyone about them or would fake it. He actually says, you know, I heard my knee go and I played the next Wednesday because I was desperate to play. Woke up on Thursday morning, couldn't walk, and I just I got that in my head about Kane. You know, I just think he probably rushes himself back, plays with niggles, and instead he should just go, guys, I've got a niggle here. I need to just, you know, when he done his hamstring, had he felt it earlier in the game, maybe?
Yeah.
You know, very possibly, because it was quite innocuous, wasn't it? He was just running to get the ball. He didn't really overstretch, and there it is. It's gone, and he's out for months, and you know, the other ones, the ankle ones, yeah. But again, why is he making those challenges on the halfway line when the ball's already off the pitch and he's twisting his ankle? Go on, mate.
100%. I think when he come back from that ankle injury, I think it was definitely noticeable from a Spurs fan point of view that he wasn't flying into as many tackles. So I do wonder if there was a, if there's been a conscious conversation about that. But I do definitely think with him that he will end up, you know, playing a slightly deeper role and being a similar type of player to what Rooney's ended up being, where he plays more in the 10 role. And if you can get somebody up ahead of him that's got absolutely blistering pace, you know, basically like the way England play, where he's up there on his own, Kane, but he often drops deep and the winger's running behind. And I think that's that. I could see that being where his career ends up going. But we're so fortunate to have a player. You know, he can play as a 9, he can play as a 10. He's a complete footballer. And yeah, like I said, where we'd be if we didn't have him and have his goals, God, I dread to think.
When you went across America, did you wear a Spurs shirt as much as you possibly could?
I wore it a fair bit. I actually watched the Aston Villa opening day of the season where we beat them 3-1 and Ndombele scored in Orlando with the Orlando Supporters Club. So that was an interesting experience.
Oh, great. And on that, what was your first kit you ever had?
So I don't actually know the answer to this, which is a little bit embarrassing. I often had the kits from the previous season. To be honest, that's still the way that I work now. So I would have first started going probably in 98-99, and that was probably my first season. I'd have been 5 or 6 then. So whoever the kit kings are amongst us can probably tell us what kit we were wearing at that point. But it was probably one of the Holston
Adidas,
ones.
I think about
was it Adidas?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly Adidas. So something like that. And what's the first match you ever remember seeing?
I believe it was a pre-season friendly. And we played Leighton Orient and we beat them 1-0 in an away game. So they were my first game was an away game, funny as that is. But Leighton Orient, you know, where I was actually born and grew up, was probably actually more local to me than what Spurs was. So yeah, we went there a few times, and yeah, that was my first game. Well, that's the first game I can remember anyway.
Are they your second team?
Yeah, when I was a youngster, I played for them for a couple of seasons. And there are a lot of people where I grew up were Orient supporters. And yeah, if you weren't an Orient fan, they were definitely your second team.
Ah, so you can play a bit?
Maybe not as much as I can currently, but I used to be half decent.
All right. And is there a match that's made you cry?
I've not ever shed a tear at a game. I've come close a couple of times. Obviously, Lucas Moura's winner against Ajax, I think if it didn't bring you to tears, it nearly did. And that was a moment for me where I just got goosebumps when that goal went in.
Just set the scene for me. Where are you for that match?
So I was at my mum and dad's house.
Yeah.
In the lounge, watching it. My mum, dad, brother, girlfriend, and my brother's girlfriend were all there. You know, everybody's Spurs supporters.
Okay.
And we just, you know, obviously we're 2 down at half-time, and we were gutted at half-time because you just felt like the Ajax weren't an amazing side. You thought they were a good team, but you thought to lose a semi-final against them over 2 legs is gutting. But, you know, we got back to 2-2, and you're thinking, God, you know, at this point, anything can happen. Mm. And Fernando Llorente, just a quick mention of him, was sensational in that second half. And for me, was a brilliant player all of last season. But when, you know, that the nod goes down to Dele, Dele plays it through and Lucas tucks it in the bottom. I mean, we just were going absolutely ballistic. So that was a moment for me that I'll always remember. As I will the final, you know, I was lucky enough to get a ticket and I went out there with my dad. And we had an amazing moment just before the game kicked off where, you know, Champions League music had played, the fans were all cheering, and we just sort of turned to each other, hugged and just sort of said, you know, like, this basically is what football's all about. Whether we win today, whether we lose, you know, what we're feeling right now, you don't get that in any other part of life other than in sport. Obviously, the result didn't turn out to be what we wanted, but I'll always look back on that game and be like, I've got so many great memories, you know, from... You know, just being in the airport with loads of Spurs fans, getting out there. It was my first game I've ever been to that's been abroad watching Spurs. We actually, the coach that took us from the airport to the fan zone went the wrong way and dropped us at the ground. And we got off the coach at the ground in the afternoon and all of the Spurs legends were there. So we got to meet all of the guys that played for us in the, you know, the 60s, 70s, 80s. So again, there's just so many great memories. And whilst I can never say it's the greatest game that I've ever been to because ultimately we lost, it's probably the moment that will stick with me for the longest just because you know, I never expected to, you know, experience a Champions League final as a Spurs fan. So I think they're probably two moments that were definitely emotional games for me.
That's brilliant. I've spoken about my Madrid experience quite a lot on these series of podcasts, where it was ruined by a couple of blokes behind just constantly being aggressive and swearing and just ruining it, just constantly in your ear, just like, shut up. But two other things I haven't mentioned. You mentioned the Champions League anthem, which was terrific, but why did they have that rock band? And I love rock music, but that rock band...
So weird.
This is not America. We're not like, woo, rock music before the match start. What are you doing? We'll sing Glory, Glory, Tottenham Hotspur. They'll sing You'll Never Walk Alone. And we'll battle each other that way. You don't need Imagine Dragons coming on and miming a pop song. So that was weird. But the other thing was, I don't know if I've mentioned this, when I went to get a couple of programmes just outside the ground, The woman who gave us the two programs, handed them over, looked down, and on the side where she was selling them was a ticket, and she went, "Oh, you dropped this," and I've gone, I took it off her, and I checked my back pocket, and there was my ticket. My dad had it. I said, "Dad, you got your ticket yet?" I had an extra ticket.
Somebody had bought
a program, put his ticket down, and forgot to pick up his ticket again.
Oh, that's awful, isn't it?
Can you imagine? I mean, like this poor bloke who's gone to the stadium and has gone, where's my ticket? So I gave the ticket back to the lady and said it's not mine. Could have made a few bob off that, but God, I saw the poor bloke.
Well, you can't imagine. Like, I've never been more paranoid about losing a ticket before a game. We were so careful, because there were so many Spurs fans out there, weren't there? And, you know, not that many of us were lucky enough to get a ticket. So me and my dad were just so paranoid all day. Like, you've got your ticket, you've got your ticket. And he ended up keeping them in an envelope in his shoe, because we were just that paranoid about someone in the wallet or something like that. But, yeah.
Cool. All right. Any funny moments you can think of in a game?
There's been some bizarre moments, you know, from being at a game where Paul Robinson scored, which was just, you know, to see a goalkeeper score a goal was just, you know, it's absolutely bizarre. That was an amazing moment for me, and that will always be something that's probably one of the strangest things that I've ever seen at a game, because you never expect that to happen, right? Let alone him to score a free kick from near enough in his own box. So that will always be a moment for me that I look back, and it's just utterly hilarious, incredible celebrations, and just a really unique moment.
I wonder if Ben Foster could have got that, but he was like, "Oh, for the keepers' union, I'll let him score that." And that's one for you, Paul.
Yeah.
What about the worst match you ever saw?
It's a tough one. I went through a phase of a couple of seasons where I was going to quite a lot of away games. We were probably doing maybe five or six a season, which might not sound like loads, but, you know, being a Spurs fan living in the South, you know, and travelling up and doing a lot of the Northern grounds, you know, every few weeks was, you know, it was quite time consuming, but it was an amazing experience. But I went to an absolute stinker of a game at Wigan. Right. Where it was, we just re-signed Defoe.
Can I get the dog out?
Okay, we just re-signed Defoe. So this was under Redknapp, and everyone was absolutely buzzing. We were going to Wigan, who were a really poor, struggling side, and we were just absolutely horrific. I remember Didier Zakora played on the right hand side of midfield, and we just did nothing. It was a real, real poor game. And then in the last minute of injury time in the second half, Wigan got a corner. Whipped the ball in, and Manuel Figueroa headed it in at the back post, and we lost in the last minute, and it was a dreadful, dreadful game of football. That was bad, just because we were so poor. And when you go to an away game, especially one that, you know, it takes hours to get there and you get beat, especially late on, it's gutting. But I think the other couple of games that stick out are the semi-final defeats that we've had in the FA Cup have been really disappointing. When we were hammered firstly 5-1 by Chelsea, and then when they beat us 4-2 only a few seasons ago, they were both gutting. And then the defeats to Portsmouth 2-0 and Man United 2-1 we really should have got to a couple of FA Cup finals. I think the one that probably hurt the most for me was the United one under Poch, where we lost 2-1. We were winning 1-0. Delhi scored and we were in complete control of that game and United come back and beat us, and that felt like a massively missed opportunity for us that year. So I think they're probably the disappointing moments, but again, perspective, I'm saying that the most disappointing games I've seen are when we've lost semi-finals of cup competitions. I've never seen us get relegated. You think of fans that support clubs that are right down the bottom of the football league, and they don't really have any good experiences. I can't complain too much.
Yeah, funnily enough, you mentioned that West Ham has probably had more exciting moments, if you like, over the last 20, 25 years, because they've been relegated so many times that they get the joy of being promoted again. That Man United game, obviously, we went 1-0 up, Delhi done the soppy Fortnite flossing, and you're going, no, don't do that. And then the other thing I remember from that game is Mourinho with his notepad. And I thought, hang on a minute, you've not made notes. Since you've been Man United manager, I've not seen you with a notepad. And now you're making notes. And I thought, the writing's on the wall. Because the last couple of semi-finals, because I run the marathon, and the semi-final's been on the Saturday and the marathon's the next day, I haven't been able to go to those semi-finals, which is quite good because we've lost them anyway. But for that one, I remember thinking, Mourinho, why are you making notes? You're going to win this now, rather than those other Man United games where he just sat there and would sort of laughing, kind of what he does at Spurs a little bit when we're losing. Get the notepad out, Mourinho, and we know we're onto a winner. What about any moment that scared you when you've been at a match or down the pub and it's got a bit hairy?
I think the only time I can really think of, oh God, this could kick off in a minute, was at a European game. I think it was against Slavia Prague. It might have been against another side, where there were a lot of away supporters in the home end. And then when they scored, they were all up cheering and celebrating, and there were a few, little scraps breaking out. Yeah. And I think the only other time where it was a little bit hairy was when they were in the Premier League. I went to Stoke for an away game. And we beat them 2-1. Cranchar scored a late goal. It must have been 85th, 86th minute, right in front of us.
Good Johnson, just after half time. Hello?
That's the one. And I actually remember at half time standing there and sort of saying, God, it's going to be difficult to get a goal. And within 30 seconds of the second half, we were 1-0 up. But anyway, we didn't play particularly well that day. Stoke had a harsh red card given against them. It was quite a feisty Premier League game, and we got the late winner. And obviously, being in the away end, we were giving it to the Stoke fans. And full-time whistle went, and we actually come out of the away end at Stoke. And the way that it worked was the police would obviously, try and keep all the away fans together, and we were sort of shepherded towards where there was this big hill out the back of Stoke, and there must have been about 50, 60 Stoke fans just all sort of stood there, and you thought, this all of a sudden feels a little bit funny, like it could kick off. Thankfully it didn't, but that was just a bit of a moment where you thought, oh, hang on, we might be in a spot above here, but we weren't. And I'm glad, that I'm not...
Are you a head towards them, or are you a get out of dodge?
I would never be stupid enough, to get into a fight or an altercation over a game of football. I just, I'm pleased that that side of the game, it doesn't exist anymore. Or even though it does a little bit, nowhere near to the extent that it used to do, in the 70s and 80s. So I'm glad that, to be honest, that's not something I've had to experience as a fan, because it's just not worth it, So at the end of the day, it's a game of football, isn't it? And I always think that it's weird that, fans get so emotional about it, and are willing to kick each other's heads in after a game. Because, I've never really understood it, to be honest.
What about a player that you've had to defend over the years? People have said, oh, he's rubbish. But you're like, no, I quite like him.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because there's always players that massively divide opinion at Spurs, aren't there? And there's one actually that I've been on the both sides of it, and it's, of recent years, it's probably been Danny Rose. Where initially when he came into the team, I wasn't sure. Then I was a massive fan of his, where he was getting a lot of criticism about his performances, and I thought, this is a guy that could be a really good player. player for us. So I was always one that I stood by him and said, you know, he's going to be a real good player for us, blah, blah. And then I sort of flipped the last 18 months where a lot of fans probably were more on his side. I just, he was completely gone. His legs were gone. The guy couldn't run anymore. Mm. So he's probably been one that I defended when others probably didn't like him. And then when everyone else seems to like him, I decided that I don't anymore. So he's been one that I've massively flipped. And I'd probably say Tom Huddleston was the other one.
Yeah.
He always used to get a lot of criticism. Just, you know, he wasn't the most mobile player. But, you know, if you're talking about a technically gifted footballer, he is one of the best that you'll see. You know, his passing range and the way he would strike a ball was just absolutely phenomenal, you know. And he scored some goals that only Tom Huddleston could have scored. And like I said, going a lot to games with my dad, he would always say that Tom Huddleston's the best passer of the ball that's been at Tottenham since Glenn Hoddle.
Yeah.
And, you know, you hear statements like that and you think, this guy is a player. He did have his limitations, and I think a lot of people were very frustrated with him because, especially in the bigger moments, in the games against, you know, Arsenal, Chelsea, you know, he could never quite do it. But he was always a player for me that I really, really enjoyed watching. And again, another one that for me is a typical Spurs player. You know, there's a certain way that you should play if you play for Tottenham. And I thought Tom Huddleston was one of those.
Well, in those last few, so the Portsmouth game, Palacios got sent off. And that was another reason why we went into the Arsenal and the Chelsea games thinking, well, that's that then.
Yeah.
But Tom Huddleston came in and upped his game massively, yeah, as did David Bentley. But Tom Huddleston was fantastic in those last few games and obviously the game at Man City as well. Mm. But he's somebody that definitely I would sit there and watch and just go, yes, good pass. Now follow it up. Now come on the ball back. And he frustrated the hell out of me. He really did. But people know about my opinion on him. And finally, what is your... just Danny Rose. Do you know what I was thinking? I think he'll get himself sorted. I think he'll lose a stone. I think he'll get himself... I don't know how this loan system's going to work, you know, with the fact that his loan probably finishes in a couple of weeks at Newcastle. Yeah. And then he's obviously back to Spurs, but obviously they'll extend all loans so he plays the rest of the season at Newcastle. I think he'll get himself fit over the summer, be ready for next season, but then he'll say something completely stupid and we'll be forced to sell him because he'll say something really negative and it's just like, shut up.
Yeah.
Whereas if he keeps his mouth shut, as I say, loses his stone, he could, in my opinion, play another season, maybe two, with Spurs at the top level with Mourinho. But what's actually going to happen is he'll probably say something stupid, won't lose that stone, keep eating his fish and chips in that brilliant fish and chip shop in Doncaster, and finish off at Newcastle. You know, although we'll... Newcastle now be one of the top clubs because they've got a Saudi sheik involved, you know.
And just a quick final point for me on Rose is that I've never had a massive issue with him speaking out. I think that he's done some interviews that have been poor, and I, without knowing the guy, you know, on a personal level, I don't know if he's just a little bit misunderstood, or if he said some things he shouldn't have, or if it's a mix of both. But to me, I want my side to have players in it that aren't afraid to speak up. I think that's what, you know, you need those good characters. And whether or not he's just sort of maybe gone about it in a slightly, you know, wrong way, I don't know. But for me, where I've just sort of had to say, I think that the door's closed for Rose now, is more the performances on the pitch. And I always think, you know, if you're speaking out in the press or you're a little bit of a controversial character, I really don't mind it if you can back it up on the pitch. And I think the difficult position he's put himself in is he's been controversial publicly, and then his performances on the pitch have been way below par. So he's not really had a leg to stand on for supporters defending him. Whereas before, where he was maybe being a bit controversial and behaving not the way you'd maybe want a professional footballer to behave, on the pitch he was brilliant. So I would sort of always give him a little bit of leeway, but I just can't anymore because I don't think he's up to it.
Well, I'd say on that, you're right, and most of what he said is right, and it's probably not his fault. It's the press secretary at Spurs who have allowed him to talk to people. And Kane the other day, you know, that interview with Jamie Redknapp, you know, just don't let him do it. Don't say to Harry Kane, you're not doing any interviews. And by the way, if they ask you anything, you just say, sir, I'm not going to comment on that. Because think about how many Liverpool players have been interviewed over the last 2 months. Not one. No, has Salah sat down with Jamie Redknapp and Jamie Redknapp said to Salah, oh, by the way, you're doing fantastic, Salah. Would you ever consider joining Real Madrid or Barcelona? And Salah, you know, would he say, oh, no, I would never join those two. I'm staying with Liverpool no matter what. Of course he wouldn't. He'd say, oh, yeah, they're massive clubs and, you know, possibly in my later in my career. And then what's the headline? Oh, Salah wants to leave Liverpool. So... possibly it's Liverpool have been brilliant with that. They've just said, guys, none of you are talking to any press, because all they'll do, they'll pick out one little thing you say and that will be the headline. And that's what it's been up until, I think, yesterday when they turned their attention to Rashford and said some pundit said, oh, Rashford would probably play well for Real Madrid or Barcelona. And then all over Twitter, it was for about 2 hours, constant, Rashford wants to join Real Madrid. Not even been interviewed. It's just some pundit had mentioned it. It's just absolutely crazy. Got to do the last question. What's your favourite match of all time? So you're walking down the street. Some fella comes from some island, washed up. I don't know where we're going with this question. And he goes, "What is this football that you talk about?" And you say, "Right, watch this." You hand him a DVD. What's on the DVD?
Well, I think, you know, from thinking about what my favourite ever game is, I think that the answer I'm going to give is more about the overall experience and what the game was, rather than, you know, I've definitely been to games that have been better and there's been more goals and high quality football than what I'm about to say. But I think the last game at White Hart Lane, the old stadium where we beat Man United 2-1, I would probably say is my favourite ever game for a few reasons. Obviously, it was the last match that we were ever playing at that stadium, right? And, you know, there's 36,000 of us that were lucky enough to be there. That's it. You know, you think about of the entire population of the world and the entire population that supports Spurs, 36,000 of us got to go to that game. And I was lucky enough to be one of them. So to have experienced that and to say, you know, I was there for the very final game and the last time a ball was kicked there will be something that, you know, I'll be able to say for the rest of my life. But I went with ASD. We sat in the Paxton upper. So to have shared that game with, you know, a really good friend is amazing. Obviously we won, but then to have seen all the legends come out, you know, there was obviously the Lane the Finale performance, which was fantastic. It was just that's the kind of game that you're only going to see once in your lifetime, you know, and most fans won't even see that because a lot of supporters will live their whole lives and, you know, they'll just see their team playing in the one stadium. So to have experienced that transition between the two is absolutely amazing. It's difficult to put into words sort of like what that was like as a fan being there for that, because it really was a case of, you know, this book's closed now. That's the end of it. We're going to open a new one and let's see where we go. But I would say that for me is probably the best game that I've been to, just for everything that it was and the whole experience as a Spurs fan that day.
Yeah, I think it was brilliant. You'd have to say to him, watch the whole thing though. When the match finishes, watch the next hour as well, because it's brilliant. So you've got a great game, a game that we win. You've got against Man United, who for the last 20 years have dominated football. You've got some decent goals. You've then got the pitch invasion. And then you've got Paul Coit saying, would everybody terribly mind if you get off the pitch? Which everybody did, right? Which was great. Yeah. Then the rainbow.
Rainbow was an amazing moment, wasn't it? That was
brilliant. You've got the video done by Kenneth Branagh. Which is brilliant as well. Me and my son, we were flicking through YouTube the other day to try and find something, some football we haven't seen a million times, and that came on the finale, and it's about an hour. It's brilliant. We watched it all from start to finish, and again, it was fantastic. All the players come out. Steve Archibald chewing his chewing gum like nonchalantly. I love that. Cliff Jones, of course, the only one that comes running out.
Amazing.
It's absolutely brilliant. And what a great choice. Most people have said other ones, but that's the first time we've had that, and I think that's terrific. Right, is there anything else you want to say, Jack?
No, just, you know, it's been just really nice chatting to you about Spurs. You know, it's always great when you have an opportunity to not necessarily talk about the current goings on, but to look back at, you know, former players and great moments and that, because, you know, it's just it makes a nice change to do that. And I think having a nostalgic podcast and this little series that you're doing has been great.
Yeah, no, brilliant. All right then, mate. Well, look, thanks for doing it, and I'll hopefully you know, meet you up the lane one day when we're all back on for
definitely.
A beer.
Definitely.
All right, mate. All right, brilliant. All right. Cheers then, matey.
Thanks a lot. See you, Steve.
Thanks. Come on, you Spurs. Bye.